Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
matecraft after a brain trauma. No, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense to people overseas listening, but it's basically how you manage your friends switching on after you had a stroke and sort of rationalising what's going on. Now, I'm doing this podcast while walking back from Blaxland all the way to my house in deep in Glenbrook. It'll take a little bit of a while just to give it, and as part of this rehab is, fundamentally it's a friend aspect, being able to speak and communicate where you don't have someone in front of you. So it's like prepare stuff, and it's a bit like it's a bit like the circuit breakers have gone at the back of the house, and you're switching on one circuit at a time, and the circuits fail, and you say, well, I'm not going to switch that one on, and sort of things begin to smoke, you say, I'm not going to switch that back on, and there's a sort of bit of rationalisation. So fortunately, I'm just with it enough to have a bit of a craft and not actually switch back on all the circuits at once. So if we go a bit, and I discuss that with you, Steve, in that once I've had the stroke, I've said, I've picked up a few interactions not gone all that well, saying, oh, well, there's things I don't understand, I've got to really get things going. And so I haven't spoken to you for a couple of years, but there's a lot of interesting stuff going along in terms of discoveries, stuff, not to take up too much of your time, just so you can hook up and link back in. So I've really sort of gone back in, sort of listened, not that you've said it, but people have said to themselves or to others, bit of a burden, and if you hear that, you pick up, well, what are you going to do? You're just going to have to really quieten down. It's sort of been a bit like dropped out of a helicopter into freezing water, and you don't know which direction is land, but all you have to do is you've got to say, pick a direction by the stars and actually just start swimming slowly and basically work out, swim out, stretches, see what you can do, not take in too much water. That's a bit how to describe. So what I'm going to do is a bit of interest is sort of just go through the mechanics of what's going on. And I suppose it's rather unique in terms of that we've just knocked around together, and we've just been quietly going, hey, that's intelligence. That's quite an interesting take, sort of a mutual enjoyment of finding things out, rather than the fig jam, fuck, I'm great, just ask me, this sort of highfalutin stuff, and that gentle enjoyment of people not quite understanding what's going on, but it's not sort of not me particularly, it's the slightly more intelligent aspect. And together we sort of sat on the scout committee and just watched a whole group of people basically ignore us and get on what they're doing anyway, and that's what majority of people do. And obviously if you ask too many questions, it's you're harder to ignore and more of a burden. But let's go into the steps up. So the heart pumps the blood. It pumps the blood into the aorta, which is basically a little bit of like a bicycle tube tire. It inflates, so the heart goes pump pump in it, and then that bleeds the aorta, bleeds the blood into the rest of the body. That's the way it is, mate. And so the aorta is actually a muscle, and it's actually a hollow muscle which squeezes the blood through you. So it goes boom, boom, and squeeze, so the blood's gently throwing through all the time. So your heart's going boom, boom. If there's no aorta, your eyes blow out every time your heart pumps. Now, the valve between aorta and the heart was cactus. It was rooted. It was, when they opened it up, they suddenly said, it's rotten. So I think if they were truly Australians, they'd say, Jesus Christ, it's rotten. So it wasn't a very good valve. But originally, by the time I got there, it was sort of like a a student car I had, where, you know, how students don't maintain their cars properly and, you know, don't buy the new filters. So the valves were shot, and what meant that my heart would pump and the blood would rush back the other way. Now, this meant sort of two major things. One is, it was pretty crap because I couldn't breathe properly, and I was short of breath, and although that was crap, when it was fixed, absolutely marvellous. Now, I'm really sorry about the noise, but that's everybody else's fault. This is the cars rushing down the Great Western Highway. So that's one aspect. Probably the second aspect was that with the valve on edge, I was absolutely terrified of sneezing. I would just hang on to things and just try and sneeze with my, just getting as much, not holding it at all as much. And so I didn't, I didn't sort of join the dots on that one. And also, stress and people being angry at me, I would just zone out. And there was various things where I could actually meditate myself out of a situation and feel no stress whatsoever. Pretty amazing stuff. Meant that I've obviously lining the ducts up. That's probably an ideal storm of someone who's annoying, someone who can come up with the odd question and the odd angle, you know, get in, mix up a situation, and then completely ignore everybody else as they've all go to shit. And so that's there. So coming in, and of course as the valve was going, I was getting little strokes. So it's a bit like your own internal cappuccino machine, where your brain does not like cappuccino blood. So I'm getting a few signs of strokes at the start. Then the big operation, they shave you, and I can tell you, even though I'm not a hairy person, they can make a small little pillow out of the hair that shave off you. And I put it in, and my heart was really on the edge. I had to put a bypass in, maybe go in back for more surgery soon, you never know. And this little Yankee valve, it's a people like going for a cow, pig. I went for nuclear. I'm not joking. This valve is made from the tip of a nuclear missile. It's the actual material the Yanks devised to make a nuclear missile. Another use to wrap around nuclear fuel rods. It's the stuff. It lasts forever. Really good. As a scientist, I said, that's the one I'm taking. 10 million years of survival time. Basically, if I'm wrong on it, I won't know. I'll ask one beat of failure. It'll go. It's super good. And so it's this little clicky valve. So where most hearts go thump, which is the charge, and thump, the thump thump. The second thump is where it goes into aorta and shuts itself, saying you can't come back. I've pumped you aorta and piss off. Well, instead of thump thump, it's thump clink, and that clinking sound. It's really high pitched clink. And when I first heard it, I put a microphone up to it and took the Fourier transform of it, analysed it, and I said, oh, look, there's something wrong here. Not something wrong. This is unusual. It's got two pieces, and sure enough, it had ripped out of my heart. So I had to have a second operation to put it back in. And now the clink and Fourier transform of it's perfect. So a nice, smooth Fourier. This is frequency analysis, sound analysis. So what I did is I put a microphone up to my chest, then did a sound analysis of it. But anyway, I had to be opened up a second time, put it in. Second time in, absolutely fantastic. In the process of it, you're going in and you're saying, well, that's it. Sort of like the last thing I remember, the orderly saying, shit, that heart-lung machine's on the blink. Is anyone going to fix it? And I was going, fuck. I sort of laughed and I sort of observed some of the biosecurity features of the operating theatre. Woke up, and now as a quantum physicist, you live the quantum life, and Schrodinger's cat is both dead and alive. And I just sort of felt that when you woke up, you had this wave function, and you sort of know that as an intellectual trying to hold down a normal job, you're very much hunted. You're sort of the Lady Diana, hunted by the paparazzi, hunted by perhaps slightly dumb, corrupt people. But sort of waking up and remembering, right, you're alive, bit of a wave function, and you got so long to actually just breathe and get going, but the danger is going to come in and you're going to have to turn up your systems and switch things on. Now, obviously after the first operation there were lots of strokes, and I think it's sort of important to sort of discuss what it's like. It's it really felt as though people would say, it's just the drugs, and go, oh. And it felt a bit as though I was very, very quiet up in my head, and it felt a bit as though you were stuck in a submarine and you had the other bits of your brain working away independently, and you could communicate with it by actually just banging a wrench against one of the pipes and go down. It's all totally dark, a kilometre of water above you to the surface. And then the surface is danger. This is, surface warfare danger, sort of ships coming up broadsiding you, giving you false signals, dropping mines around your torpedo. So you're down beneath in a sort of safe depth there, but there's no sound. And you had the other elements of your brain alive. And I know this sounds stupid, but I sort of counted about seven. I've forgotten what they were called, the different areas to deal with things. I sort of had the front desk to talk to people, but other areas to deal with sort of maths and bits of logic, or in sort of separate, all slightly different colours. So vapoury colours. Weird as, that's the way it is. It's one of these things that no one can say, what the heck are you talking about? That's not true. It was, in actual fact, true. And these vapors would come together a little bit, and I would, strange, I sort of apologized to the guys, saying, okay, well, we've pulled through, but almost speaking to these things separately. Now, they've sort of now gotten to their positions and work together almost seamlessly. But what I can say, it's still trying to find out information. Now, the interesting thing is that when I discussed the colours and seeing colours, I said to medico thing, now the colours I see with numbers are slightly different. I said, what? And then they found out that I did perceive colours around numbers, sort of like, particularly in a list in the books, of accounting books, I was seeing the numbers which were fudged, or thing would turn up slightly red behind them. Various things, and sort of the small window of imagination where I'd be able to actually think things was very much smaller before I'd have a big white screen in front of me. And Like before, I'd be able to pull down on one side of my imagination a diagram, rotating diagram on the left, equations. I'd be able to do that. I couldn't pull them down at the same time. It's sort of getting back. I don't think it'll ever quite get back. I'm at, Coghlan Road. And this man in a white van's going, am I cuckoo or anything like that? So that's the overall overall thing. See how noisy it is here, mate? And just, good God, come on, cars. I'm just looking at whether I can... It's not worth it going at the back here. You should be able to hear pedestrian clock thing going, but you wouldn't be half so lucky. You can hear that a bit in the background with the background and that stuff. Now I'll just cross here, hope I don't get killed walking home and doing a podcast. That would be ideal. So we're at the stage of going across and trying to interpret what people are saying and stuff, not being able to understand it, and actually sensing that as a sort of in the blackness, an area of space which you can't understand. And so you do a response and you see the echo pattern in the shapes. It's sort of like a perturbation thing, trying to work things out. And realizing that you're in a, you're still in a threat situation. I was still in a threat situation. Even you would think that, like in the rules of war, if you're wounded, you're out. But the rules of war, they were still really going mentally for me at work. But I just sort of took in my stride. But then, sort of the. Observing yourself from the outside, and it's not a faffa valve that has been able to shut the fuck up and pick up what other people are saying. And so, and I would be observing, and I've unfortunately, burnt out one person, which is sort of like a bad circuit. Shit, I've burnt that circuit. Toss it. You can't toss it in the recycling. You go like this, and you say, "Oh, what's the strategy here?" Or someone else, you say, "Well, look, I'll limit myself to visiting him once a month." And this wife couldn't stand me anymore. Even visiting once a month, close the curtains. And I said, "Okay, I know that's. I'm not gonna drive this circuit and blow it up anymore. Let's pull back." And say with you, people go, "Oh, you're not a burden." Oh, well, the bottom line is that people's sort of marketing me focus thing of life is burden. I mean, it's a burden saying that you're a burden, but you are a burden, and you have to work out. You say, "Oh, no, I'm not a burden." You are a burden. Now let's just try and work out how you can minimise it, and how much people's smiles on the face when you're not there. And so you work this out, and sort of associated with that is working out, yes, you are a burden, but also a lot of people thinking things are not thinking really clearly, and they're not really thinking happily ever after. With a stroke person, and it's sort of like if they made a pronouncement, you can't get better. It just basically means that I can't be bothered with you getting better. And at the end of the day, I've had to actually get on my bike and just punch through. So nearly 2,000 podcasts like this, getting it where I can actually put things across. And of course, overseas visitors, they're not overseas visitors, the podcast goes into their room. They have to actually listen to a podcast with the noise of the Great Western Freeway. That's what it is. I have to try and speak with it. I've got to think about it. I've got the issue, and you've got to get it through. Trying to actually push through the podcast. Initially, I just couldn't breathe at the start of the podcast. A very short thing, really boring, stilted, not being able to summarise all this absolute crap. Rule number one is never listen to your own podcast. You're gone if you listen to your own podcast. Pushing that through. Then I've had to get back up and write the computer programs. Now, I've shared with you some of the computer programs, and you can see, even though every single soul has said, that's rubbish. Oh my, I know a good stuff. I just go into the Apple shop and everyone smiles and winks at me, and it's got this lovely Apple sign on it, and oh, and I have to pay money for it, so it must be good. Well, I've been able to produce this, some of the stuff where you just basically get in there with robot language and take over the applications in your computer and basically orchestrate them to run your podcasts. So that's one aspect of moving forward. And then this is with your friends, is quarantine. Basically, it's sort of like a coronavirus thing. I've been in mate lockdown, and that is not hazmat suit, but say when I'm going up to identify certain people and form the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute, friends that know that I'm there and I'm talking about institute stuff, and they can talk about institute stuff, and then they know where I'm coming from, that I'm practicing, and so developing visiting chocolate. That is when I'm visiting people, bring chocolate with them. Initial thought, oh no, I don't like eating chocolate. That threw me for a while, sort of. That seems to be the obvious thing. You can't really bring beers around to everybody. I suppose that's the way to do. That's a bit sucky. But then I struck upon the ultimate dork weapon, and that is give a cantaloupe at Christmas to all the various friends. It is odd enough that in general there's a friend and a spouse who is totally manipulating the spouse, interpreting everything such that, oh no, that's not good, oh he's awful, and you have to, they're sort of like a bushfire, you have to control them all the time. And you lob in a watermelon, so a rock melon, nice, juicy, the top of the range one, and it's, oh, let's cut this up and eat it, do a little bit of social. It's sort of like I don't know, throwing cheese to rats or something like that. It's sort of, it's not bait, is it? It's not so good. So this is the working through. Now, sort of no rhyme or reason, I've had you in the back burner. Now, the aspects which are good, when is it your lateral thinking, natural leader, sense of humour, which is great, and basically you've sort of come in on the ground level and seen sort of that it's been across education, and it's not so that I've thought, or either of us thought, oh, what we're doing is so fantastic. It's just, oh, this is really interesting. If you do that, you watch this happening. It's really interesting if you can write a computer program or analyze this or build this invention. Hang on, just enjoy the invention for what it is. Not whether people are going to appreciate it, they're not going to, but let's just sit back. And this the sort of things I really liked doing in the lab. You would be able to produce a laser effect or produce some sort of effect which you knew that you could see. You take a few people in, a few people be interested, out of 10, two people be interested, rest not interested. Let's move on now. And you can share that with that 2 out of 10 people. You can share that special moment. So there's a couple of times where I've just phoned people up. I said, hang on, nothing's happening for the next 3 hours. I'm just going to call a few people across the university. Can you come now, mate? Yep. And I think in Canada, in Sydney University, I call them across to the lab, show them effect and say, there's a bit, I would give a bit of a steal. And they go, oh, you're going to show it to us? Yep. And then there'd be this mutual amazement that it was too advanced. It wasn't going to be published. But I was sharing it with them. And so there was a sort of similar thing with you, sharing some advanced maths and sharing it with you. And you sort of know the hidden misinterpretation of what's going on. So I'm going across. And in the meantime, I'm sort of looking at Glenbrook embedded with these groups, helping them out, and going, truly, if I want to rehabilitate, I really should pull the pin on Glenbrook and move to some remote part of Australia where I can actually drop the profile, definitely not be a burden, and just quietly plug away at speaking, at software, at fitness, like the friends that I've organized on a daily roster, 3 friends a week on a weekly roster, to a point that they really know that they can say, enough's enough, we can cut that off. I can perhaps do anywhere, which is sort of like, you know, it's important. I suppose it's important. Just sort of, I suppose for them, it's sort of been a great experience. Probably there's about 4 people like that. But realistically, in terms of the minimum stress and getting to that quietness. Now, the sort of like a real, this is going to be a fairly intense thing to say, is that basically all the brain stuff is sort of like a generalized roller coaster ride. And so in the early stages of your life, it's all about getting up to the top. And afterwards, it's downhill and enjoyment. And I've sort of been lucky to have a sort of a bit of a rebuild session. But you sort of, there is this sort of supreme quietness. It's not, I suppose it is, a bit of strokes is brain death, but it's sort of this quietness. And this pullback where people are speaking really quickly around you, there's seems to things that you freeze frame something, and you pull it back, you analyze what they've said, and you're saying, no, this is not really important, is it? It's not really important that I devote, you know, a large amount of my life to understanding what's going on. And then just look at the books, you know, look at you've got assets and liabilities. You've got to sort of, I mean, it's a real tough thing. You've got to look at yourself as a liability or a burden, and you sort of say, keep it sensible, keep it quiet. There's things to quietly get done, but try and get it done in such a low-key manner and connect things up, but you've got to keep things at a pace. So if I can say, there's the speaking rebuild, which I've hopefully got through, and there's a huge long way to go on that. There's certain aspects which I've got up, other aspects in terms of the overall structure and interest and stories are not there. There's that rebuild, and there's a huge amount of work involved with that. There's the writing rebuild, and the writing rebuild has had a few funny things. That writing is a bit unusual, because a lot of people write to a mythical medium Twitter audience, and a lot of people don't read what people write. very few people read what they write. In fact, the more people read tweets and news headlines, the less they read long, detailed stuff. And this is one of the things I have been doing, is reading long, detailed books, getting it all together, reading articles end to end, really appreciating books and realizing that, you know, no, other people aren't reading books. But they're not reading books. They're also not reading you. And if they're not reading you, it's and you're writing, it's sort of like that's your target. But if you go straight for that target, you're not going to get it. So what I've done to do is actually build software to help me write papers. And writing papers in a new a completely new style, which I think might come across, because and there's elements of marketing, that is creating something which is not, well, firstly I write something up and then I get machine reading to read it crudely, and then a bit of Google voice when it's up to its limits to read it immaculately, and then I post it on that. I've got the actual images, and the images are structured, and the structures go through. Now, this is the fact is that after 30 minutes of listening to any of my own writing, I fall fast asleep. I just fall fast asleep. Which means it's very hard to get the full gist of everything, which means that you are left polishing and working up different areas. I don't know what that means in the overall structure. It means that what I'm producing is sort of like the first car, I think. It's a bit like the thing, and it's in the shed, and I've built it, and I can't get out of the shed, so I've got to knock down the doors, and then it's only got enough power in it to actually go around the block before it's used up all its petrol. It's got all these problems with it, yet as a mechanism it's the way to go. Now, with all the structure and the fact that you're on limited resources, you can't, when people say, oh look, write a grant for our organisations, or do this for our organisation, you can't say, right on, okay, I'm going to work on that for 72 hours straight and produce something perfect. You've got to rationalise a few hours like this, and in that few hours you're not going to do everything. You can achieve so much, but so much insight. So that's what I'm getting up to. And so remarkably, I've pushed back. There's still the same sort of inept, I suppose, humble person inside. Slightly different, obviously. It's sort of like with a certain amount of stuff punched out. But I think a lot of people didn't. This is not sounding arrogant or anything. A lot of people don't have it in the first place to lose it. So on that story, we're getting back to pick up time at the primary school, have a good chat with you, and send this off to you. Bye, mate. Bye. Bye, Steve.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.